Just about the weekend here, as we've got a very busy show on tap today. We remember an icon that the hockey world and community lost. The Toronto Maple Leafs are an absolute juggernaut. The Flames get a familiar bench boss and more coming up on the Friday edition of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go. As always, thank you very much for tuning in to the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Kyle Grimard as your host. If you want to follow along with everything that we keep up on, just make sure to follow on Instagram and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. About 20 episodes uploaded right now on our YouTube channel. Just search the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast and all the audio pieces there. If you don't stream on any of those services, articles coming out for the hockey writers involving the Vancouver Canucks, and I will be joining Mike Stubbs, voice of the London Knights, later on tonight on 980 CFPL News for his program, Friday Nights. And wow, just an incredible show to kick things off today. I mean, we got a lot of different topics around the league. Iconic player retiring, Brent Seabrook. We got to get to him a little bit later on today. We got to talk to Calgary Flames. They got a new bench boss. The North Division, the Leafs are a friggin' juggernaut. They're a unit, and there are issues right now at Edmonton. And funny enough, before that series against Toronto, there were no issues. They were 11-2 going into that series, but now there's a lot of questions being asked about that team. And a PSA out there to any up-and-coming player who tries to go out and attack and aggravate the greatest goal scorer in NHL history, just don't. That's not the way to do it to get into the show. So we'll get to that and more, but we want to kick things off as the world remembers Walter Gretzky.
You were my first teammate. You built my first rink, bought my first stick, and took me out at first light. You were the first defender I faced, the first goalie I scored on, and my first coach, my first fan, and my biggest. From my first step on the ice until my last step off of it, you were there for me.
Walter Gretzky, the father of Wayne, passed away yesterday at the age of 82. He had a 9-year battle with Parkinson's disease, and there was a very touching post from Wayne in a social media on his Twitter and Instagram on Thursday that his father battling that disease for some time and for a few years. He says, "With deep sadness that Janet and I share the news of the passing of my dad." Wayne Gretzky said he bravely battled Parkinson's and other health issues over the last couple of years, but he never let it get him down. For me, he was the reason I fell in love with the game of hockey. He inspired me to be the best I could, and not just in the game of hockey, but in life. Walter Gretzky became a name himself, obviously constant in Wayne's hockey world as his son came up. He was a very blue-collar symbol. He was very devoted hockey parent, but very much so within the community of Brantford. Now, I work for a radio station in London, Ontario called Country 104. We have a very unique signal where we branch out to places like Woodstock, Oxford County, and Middlesex, and Brantford. Brantford is the home of Walter Gretzky, Wayne Gretzky. There is a street arena named after him. So we kind of dedicated the show to him today. And I asked listeners to text in or call in and share some of their stories. And it was like he was just another member of the community, but knew his last name had some pedigree to it. And hearing the stories about him volunteering on camp day for Tim Hortons, for going through a McDonald's and buying people's orders for them and signing autographs in the middle of taking a bite of his food or a drink or whatever it was, smile on his face would always go over. He understood his role and responsibility as the name Gretzky. And it wasn't even him. It was his son. And I heard stories from people going through a grocery store and seeing Walter there. And people just called him Walter. Walter or Walt. Like, it wasn't, oh my gosh, that's Walter Gretzky. Oh, hey, Walter, how's it going? Like, that was the interaction you would get with him. Now, I never had the pleasure or opportunity of running into him, but his house, if you know a celebrity house, well, you think of celebrities and homes and their villas and mansions and all that, right? They're gated off communities. They are boarded up. You've got trees surrounding it. And if you drive by, you go, see that little peep right there? That's the Gretzky's. There's no gate on his house. There's no forest or tree line around his house. You can see it plain as day. It is right there embedded within the community. And one of the best stories I heard today, as a woman named Sue, she called him. She said, I have a story. So my son was, it wasn't even hockey related, it was baseball. He said, we were at a baseball game. My son, I believe he was 6 or 7 years old. And they were playing a game against Paris, Ontario, if you know that area. And she said, we never beat Paris. Paris is always a better team than ours. And Walter Gretzky was in the stands. And she was cheering for her son. She was saying, I'm just going to make up a name. But he's like, go, Jack, go. And Walter sat down beside her. And they started talking back and forth. Like, this is a random conversation that just started up. And she was saying, oh, yeah, you know, it's such a good game. And she's like, oh, like, nice try. And he could tell that she was cheering for his kid's team, which I don't know if it was Brantford or not, but nevertheless. And he goes, oh, is your son playing for that team? And she goes, yeah, that's, he's right there. And Walter had, I believe, a grandkid or a nephew on the opposing team. Well, Walter, knowing that Paris was going to win the game, started cheering along with this woman, Sue, anytime her son did something well or the team did, because that's the support that he wanted. Like, coming from a competitive standpoint where all you want to do is see your kid, anything like that, succeed. And he comes in, notices a parent cheering for her kid, and supports her by cheering. That story embodied, from what I have heard, who Walter Gretzky was as a person. There is so much I could go into with all of the stories being shared by celebrities, and he had his autobiography and 2005 movie for him that told his story, you know, and everything that he did. And honestly, it's family stories like that that we got this morning. If you ever want to know who Walter was as an individual, it's that. So, unfortunately, he was a chain smoker. He battled Parkinson's. He had a stroke back in the 90s, lost some of his memory. Wayne came out and said that hockey was kind of the one thing that helped piece some of his memory back together. And just the world is reaching out. I love right now that the world is sharing. Yes, rest in peace and rest well. But a lot of people, from what I heard today, are sharing memories and great stories in remembrance of him and how great of a father he was and how great of a role model in the community that he was. And that's what he would have wanted. He would have wanted to know that he made a difference in his community, and he made a difference not just to himself or to his kid, but made a difference to each and every individual that he ever came into contact with. He was the 2010 torchbearer on the final day of the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver, where his son Wayne lit the Olympic flame, and just remarkable. So in memory of Walter Gretzky, that is the name of this episode today. Walter, rest in peace at the age of 82. Just a tough day in the hockey world, but it only felt appropriate to not only name the episode after him, but to kick off the show dedicating it to his memory. All right, let's get into some other news around the National Hockey League. And the Toronto Maple Leafs lost last night to the Vancouver Canucks. The Vancouver Canucks, they lost the game 3-1. This was a game where Toronto played its fourth game in 6 nights. It was a back-to-back on the road playing a team who was not playing a back-to-back, who was at home, who was humiliated by them in 3 games earlier on in the season. And Vancouver squeaked out a 3-1 win. Toronto was a juggernaut. I don't know. I've hearing a lot of things. Like, is either the North Division that bad or is Toronto that good? Now, Toronto's only, I think, 7 points up on the Winnipeg Jets right now. But Toronto against the Edmonton Oilers dismembered them. In a 3-game series, they swept the Edmonton Oilers on the road, held Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl to one assist over a three-game span. There was a stat, it was only the third time in Connor McDavid's career that he's ever been kept off the score sheet in three consecutive games. I am wondering, because I didn't see this stat, I didn't have enough time to look it up, but is this not the first time in Connor McDavid's career that he has been shut out in three consecutive games by the same team? Now, you would have to look at it either in a playoff series, which I don't think he did, or you would have to date back to the three games that you would play in a normal season where you don't play three or four games in a row. You would have to kind of go back and date back and look at like a February 2nd game. Then you'd have to go back to January 13th, and then you'd be going all the way back to November just to compose three games together. And you might get three games in there, but in three consecutive games, back to back to back, that this has never happened to Connor McDavid. They almost did it to both McDavid and Draisaitl. Draisaitl picked up the lone assist on like a Ryan Nugent Hopkins rebound goal. But that was a dismantling. And Edmonton knew it too. McDavid came out afterwards and said, for whatever reason, we couldn't figure out those guys. And they had us pretty figured out. Leon Draisaitl came out afterwards and said, I think they played a really good all three games. Made it hard on us, but we also didn't push back enough. This team is different. And it's wild to me that the biggest difference is, because the forward group is the forward group. There aren't no, like, Joe Thornton, by the way, is 11 points in like 13 games. And Jason Spezza has like 17 and 23. It's nuts. But the two biggest additions for this team, I would say three. One, a backup goalie in Jack Campbell. Right? But they had Michael Hutchinson last year, and Michael Hutchinson got a shutout this year. The two biggest, in my opinion, are TJ Brody and Zach Bogosian. Last February, over a year ago, I tweeted out the Toronto Maple Leafs should go out and acquire Zach Bogosian and put him on their bottom pair. I swear to God. I said he'd be the perfect fit. He brings toughness. He's cheap. You don't have to trade for him because he was a free agent let go by Buffalo. I believe it was Buffalo. And he gets signed to Tampa Bay. I think he signed like a league minimum contract. Now, he wasn't the top player or top defenseman, but when Victor Hedman, Ryan McDonagh were injured, he played top 4 minutes in a big role and won a Stanley Cup with the Tampa Bay Lightning. So this offseason, Toronto general manager Kyle Dubas goes out and acquires Zach Bogosian. He has been on the bottom pair every game. I think he's missed one game all year. He and TJ Brody bring this toughness, reliability, and simplicity to a defense that had way too many skilled, puck-moving defensemen who didn't like to be hit or take a hit outside of Jake Muzzin. It's exactly what this team needed. TJ Brody, it was funny because everyone's like, oh my gosh, I've never known this about TJ Brody. Never let him leave. If you've ever watched the Calgary Flames, like for the last 5 years before this year, everyone, by the way, if you're a Calgary Flames right now, you know exactly what TJ Brody was. You're probably sitting there being like, yeah, TJ Brody's doing what TJ Brody's doing. He's a great complementary piece to your top defenseman on the left side. He plays the right side. He makes them better. He's like the unsung hero on that defense corps. He's not going to throw the most amount of points. I don't think he has a goal yet on the team. But he's got like 9 assists in 20-something games. And for $5 million, you're like, yeah, that's a pretty fair amount to a guy who's going to eat 20, 22 minutes a night. It didn't surprise me in the slightest. But what did surprise me was two players left, two players were inserted in the Leafs defense corps. The players that left, Cody Ceci, Tyson Barrie. Cody Ceci was playing way too much. You've replaced Cody Ceci with TJ Brody, and you've replaced Tyson Barrie, who's having a year, by the way, in Edmonton. Like, offensively, he's been phenomenal. But you replace Tyson Barrie with Zach Bogosian, and it balances everything out. You didn't need to go out and get Alex Pietrangelo for $9 million. You didn't need to go out and trade for a Colton Parenko or a Matt Dumba or whatever. You just needed balance because the names were there. You had Morgan Riley. You had Jake Muzzin. Justin Hall on that side was great. You needed one guy to pair with Morgan Riley. You did that with TJ Brody to complement his skill set and let him. That was the problem with Cody Ceci and Tyson Berry. They didn't complement. They're like Tyson Berry's a fine player on his own. Cody Ceci, obviously, he's had his struggles, but they didn't complement what Toronto was looking for them to do. Toronto found two guys that complement their team unbelievably well, and it's made all the difference in the world. It took for them to lose to Vancouver. It took them playing on a back-to-back on the road, playing their fourth game in six nights, and their third-string goaltender. And Toronto still outshot Vancouver and almost won that game. And also, Vancouver had circled it on their calendars for weeks after getting humiliated by Toronto in a three-game series earlier on this year. All of that, that's how much it took for Toronto to finally drop a game. Because it looked like they were never going to again. They are the class of the North Division. They should run away with it. It's between them. I still think Montreal can heat up and come back and vie for that second, third spot. But it's Toronto, Winnipeg, Montreal. And then I had Calgary as like the final team to make it. And maybe we'll talk about them in a little bit. But right now, Edmonton's kind of holding down that spot. Because before that series, as we transition here to the Edmonton Oilers, Edmonton was 11-2 over the last 13 games before playing that three-game set with Toronto. And they looked like a shell of what they are. Toronto just shut down their two guys and said, beat us some other way. Beat us with James Neal. Beat us with Josh Archibald. Beat us with Kyler Yamamoto. Right? Have a defenseman score from the blue line. Toronto just frustrated. They look different this year. They frustrated the heck out of Edmonton. And Edmonton unraveled. McDavid unraveled. Draisaitl. You just saw it. Like, by the third game, when Toronto was up 2-0, they got a power play. They scored 6 seconds, into the power play. And Edmonton was like, it's over. Like, there was no coming back from it. Hyman bullies his guy off the puck. Ilya Mikheyev scores. Everyone scored in that series, it felt like, for Toronto. Thornton was in on it. Spezza was in on it. Guys who were in massive goal droughts were in on it. It didn't matter. And it begs the question. Is Edmonton legit? Yes, it was three straight games against one of the hottest teams in League Toronto, but you were also one of the hottest teams, and you arguably have two of the top five players on planet Earth on the same team. They mustered one assist. And guess what? That happens. You know what you need? Complementary pieces that are going to score when those guys don't. Now, defensively, I think if Oscar Klefbom is there this year, they are a little bit better because then you have the Nurse. You've got, Larson is kind of, he's had a nice little bounce back season. Ethan Bear, like their top four would have been solidified. And Tyson Berry and, yeah, anyone's. Klefbom not being there hurts, but injuries happen. Tampa Bay doesn't have Nikita Kucherov. They're still winning games. Dallas doesn't have Tyler Seguin. They were still winning games. St. Louis doesn't have Vladimir Tarasenko. They're still winning games. Toronto missed Austin Matthews in two of the three games against you, and they're still winning games. You can use the injury thing as an excuse. You can use it as a ploy, but at the end of the day, you still got to go out there and play games. Edmonton this offseason address their defense by signing an offensive defenseman, Tyson Berry, who has done his part offensively, but he was on the ice for quite a few goals. That one against William Nylander where he's just sliding. I don't know where he was going on that play, but that's not a defensive play that TJ Brody would make, that Morgan Riley would make, that Jake Muzzin would make, right? He's out there slip sliding all over the place, and that was what just killed Colorado and Toronto fans were plays like that. They kill you. They hinder you. Edmonton did not address their goaltending last year, from last year. And the only way they addressed their defense was bringing in Tyson Barry, who came off a career-worst season in Toronto. They didn't address defense. They got a guy who plays on defense, but he's an offensive defenseman. And goaltending, yeah, Mike Smith, that was a nice little run that he went on there. But you can't count on that from a 30-year-old. You know what you have in your goaltending, in Mikko Koskinen and Mike Smith. Toronto addressed the two areas they needed to address. Calgary addressed the area they needed to address. They got deeper. They switched up their lineup. Now they've got a couple lines that can attack you. And I know Calgary's not doing great right now, but I still think give them time, they'll come back. Montreal addressed their issues. Even though they're kind of spiraling right now, they got secondary scoring. They got toughness. They got a backup goalie. Toronto got a backup goalie, defensive defenseman. They're harder to play against. And Edmonton just witnessed firsthand and got it fed to them how much better defensively Toronto got. They did not address defense or goaltending. They knew they were going to be without Klefbom. Right? When he got injured, I forget when he got injured, but it was a big blow to the team, but you had at least a little bit of time to prepare. You made the adjustments. A lot of Edmonton media fans are questioning whether this team can do it. And sometimes when you've got those two superstar players, you need other guys to contribute. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins scored the only goal for that team in that series, in that whole series. Ottawa has scored, I mean, they've played games obviously earlier this season. They've kind of gone back and forth with 4-3 and 4-2 and right? But this series, Toronto, they played up. Edmonton did not. So there's a lot of questions swirling right now at Edmonton on whether or not they can do it. They're worthy. And it might just be it was a three-game slide. You didn't bring your best. You got a little too complacent. They got in your heads. Shake it off. Go play Vancouver. Go play Calgary, get your mojo back, come back. You've got McDavid Draisaitl, you're going to be fine. But those questions around goaltending and defense are not going to go away until something is done about it. It made all the sense in the world to bring in Jacob Markstrom. It made all the sense in the world to bring in Braden Holtby. All the sense in the world. And you stayed with Koskinen, and you brought back Mike Smith. They've had some good games, but you had them last year. You knew what they were last year. You didn't make the playoffs last year. Or you did. You lost in the play-in series to Chicago. Toronto lost in the play-in series. So we got to find a way to get tighter defensively. Get a backup goalie. Work on our depth. Get tougher. They did all those things. Edmonton didn't. They re-signed Tyler Ennis. Josh Archibald. They brought in Puljujarvi. Tyson Barry. We'll see. We'll see if they can bounce back. But that three-game set, that's a wake-up call to the Edmonton Oilers. Also, Toronto's going to be fine, by the way. They're going to play Vancouver tomorrow. They're going to spank them. It took Vancouver to be at home waiting in the rains for Toronto to come in playing their fourth game in six nights on a back-to-back on the road with their backup goaltender. That's what it took for Vancouver to get a 3-1 win over Toronto. I think Toronto's going to be fine. Vancouver needs to, I'm more expecting it to be a better game tomorrow for both teams. Let's move on here. And this is breaking news, by the way. We got this probably 20 minutes ago, half an hour ago. Former Blackhawks defenseman Brent Seabrook retiring, calling it a career after 15 seasons in the National Hockey League. Brent Seabrook had been placed on the LTIR Friday. He was signed through the end of the 2023-2024 season and said, you know what? I'm going to call it a career. I talked to my family, my friends, and decided to make that call. He's like, I am so proud to have played my entire 15 career National Hockey League career in Chicago with the Blackhawks. It was an honor to play the game that I love with the teammates I love in front of the fans I love, a city and my family that I have grown to love. 35 years of age, in a statement, after several surgeries, countless hours in rehab and training to get back on the ice, it will not be possible for me to continue playing hockey. His career, I feel like Brent Seabrook, and a lot of hate was thrown on Seabrook and some of that older core after the accomplishments that they had, and saying like, oh, I can't, like, people are just so easy to just run guys out of the building and not go back and remember what they accomplished for that team. Brent Seabrook ends his career after 1,114 games, another 123 playoff games. He has a career of 103 goals and 464 points in the regular season with a plus 111 rating, along with 3 Stanley Cup championships, an Olympic gold medal in 2010. Former first round pick, 14th overall in the 2003 draft. Him and Duncan Keith became one of the best defensive pairings in the post-lockout world. And he was a nightmare to play against. Like, he was the perfect combination. Like, if you remember what, like, guys like Shea Weber, like, he was in Norris conversations with Shea Weber, Roman Josi, and, like he was in the top tier of defensemen. He played on Team Canada. He was on that team with Drew Doughty and Shea Weber and Brent Seabrook and Duncan Keith were their top pairing. That's how good he was. And I feel like people forgot that. It's so easy sometimes to be like, yeah, you know, thank, because he tailed off a little bit for sure. But I just think that don't just kind of be like, yeah, like, you know, thanks for everything, Brent. Like, he was one of the best defensemen in franchise history. This was from Stan Bowman from the Blackhawks organization. Said, without Brent Seabrook, the Chicago Blackhawks would not have 3 Stanley Cups. He's the president and GM of the team. He concludes his career as not only one of the best defensemen in franchise history, but one of the greatest Chicago Blackhawks of all time. He will be remembered of that. At least if you're a Chicago fan listening, you can understand and appreciate the greatness that Brent Seabrook had. I think the last, what, 2 seasons, he's tailed off a little bit. He's gotten a little slower, and it's a lot harder adapting to a faster game, but with the injuries and everything that he went through. But we need to put some recognition and some praise as to what Brent Seabrook meant to that organization and what he embodied on that team. And I just think that can't go unappreciated. So congratulations to Brent Seabrook on an absolutely spectacular career. 15 seasons, over 1,000 regular season games, over 100 career playoff games, 3 Stanley Cups, and a gold medal. One of the best to ever do it. Have a career, and congratulations to Mr. Brent Seabrook. Another news story that kind of hit just recently. The Calgary Flames, 11 hours ago, made the announcement. Daryl Sutter is the new head coach of the Flames after relieving Jeff Ward of his coaching duties. So kind of a familiar face or a new bench boss, needing to get some new words in there. You know, this was after a couple weeks of speculation that Jeff Ward was kind of on the hot seat for the team. Calgary Flames, a lot of forwards were asked questions and team members were asked questions about the coaching situation. And Milan Lucic came out and said the Flames struggles have nothing to do with the coaches. They, you know, they continue to back him, but ultimately the decision was made. Daryl Sutter comes back into the fold as the head coach of the team. In the North Division right now, the Calgary Flames sit 5th, 1 spot out of a playoff position with an 11-11-2 record. A couple points behind the Montreal Canadiens, who have 2 games in hand. 4 points back of the Edmonton Oilers, and they have a game in hand on them. And then obviously Winnipeg and Toronto in there. But they're not in a horrible position. They're not completely out of it. But the Flames right now, there was a lot of expectations coming into the season. you went out and you brought in a couple players on the Vancouver Canucks from last year who had substantial playoff success. You got your number one goaltender in Jake Markstrom. You brought in a little bit more defensive-sounding defenseman in Tanev. You lost TJ Brody, but you've evened out your lineup as well. You put Lindholm in the middle. You have Monahan and Gaudreau on a separate line. You're a little bit more balanced of a team. And there were expectations on them. You know, you make that leap when you sign a couple guys and you move things forward. And, you know, the Calgary Flames threw so far. You knew it was going to be like they were going to kind of bounce and figure out what the game plan would be for them. But the Flames, you know, last season they were 24-15-3 under Jeff Ward before making him permanent this past September. So he had a great start, but it just seemed to... They were winning games against Ottawa and sometimes Vancouver, but they weren't competitive in games against teams like Toronto. And yeah, they've had a couple wins against Winnipeg, but I think Edmonton's gotten the better of them so far this season. And with the changes that were made to the team right now, they've only won three of their last nine games, or I think four of their last 10 after last night. They're only 23rd in the league in goal scoring. It's just a change of the guard, and they might have got a little bit too... They might have jumped the gun a little bit with Jeff Ward. I don't know it enough to really dive into the situation, but Sutter is an individual who was the Flames head coach from 2002 to 2006. He was a part of the LA Kings organization from 2016 to 2017. He's won a pair of Stanley Cups with the Kings. He was with the Flames when they went on their Stanley Cup Finals run back in 2004. He has been integrated with this organization for some time. It makes a lot of sense for the team. If you remember, Ward ended up replacing Bill Peters back in 2019, and then obviously became the full-time head coach for this season. But just an interesting move, and it has everything to do with expectations. And this is such a tough year too, right? Montreal dismissed Claude Julien, almost 10 days ago now, which is crazy to me to think that that was 9 days ago that Claude Julien was let go from the Montreal Canadiens, and they brought in some new coaching under their advisement for the time being. But it's a tough year to evaluate, you know, like letting coaches go or keeping them on or how much leash to give, because it's so unprecedented in what we're dealing with right now. We're playing in an all-Canadian division. There's rivalries left, right, and center. You're playing teams basically in mini-series every single time. Like, it is hard to win in this league. Like, if I look at the standings, teams, what Toronto is doing right now is insane. 18-5-2 is nuts. Tampa Bay without Nikita Kucherov going 16-4-1, playing the same teams over and over again. Like, you start figuring teams out, their tendencies, how they play, and you think there's a little pushback. Carolina 16-6-1. And Florida's 14-4-4. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, records like the Oilers at 14-11 make sense. Records like Colorado in the entire league right now, who are projected to be like a Stanley Cup contender, are 12-7-1. They sit 14th in the NHL, tied with the Minnesota Wild. That's how crazy this league is. Montreal has six overtime or shootout losses because the games are so tight. It's unbelievably... Pittsburgh is 17th. I don't think Pittsburgh's in a playoff spot right now. It's a tough year to be going through all of this. So I understand the expectation level for the Calgary Flames. This might have just been, listen, we need a new voice in the room. He's respected. He's been with the organization before and had success. He's gone to another organization and had success before. So Daryl Sutter, it makes a lot of sense. Based on that, I know a lot of teams are going with kind of the younger coaching styles and whatnot, but I agree with the hiring of Daryl. I mean, I don't disagree or agree with the firing of Jeff Ward, but if the Flames are like, listen, we got to get in this year. Like, we got a new goalie. Our team is more leveled. Our defense hasn't changed all that much. We've got Hanifin, Rasmus Anderson, Mark Giordano, Tanev's there. I know we lost TJ Brody, but there were a lot of expectations on this team. So I understand. If you're going to do it now with half the season left, because before you know it, this season's over and you don't have enough time anymore to get back into the playoff position. Edmonton's reeling. Montreal's reeling. Both those teams are ahead of you. Calgary kind of reeled a little bit. They've rattled off a couple wins against Ottawa. Build on that. Claw your way back in. The timing and everything, it does actually make sense the more and more I think about it. But nevertheless, another big news story coming out just less than a day ago, 12 hours ago. Daryl Sutter, the new head coach of the Calgary Flames. All right, we got some news and other rumors and details to get to in just a little bit before we're ending off the show. But I want to finish with this story here. So, the Washington Capitals and Boston Bruins, I think they played a couple nights ago. I think Washington won. It was Char's return to Boston Gardens. And he was like, it was a little weird. It's not as emotional without fans there. But Char's first game in Boston without wearing a Bruin uniform since signing with Capitals. Washington won, I think, 2-1 in a shootout. Good solid game. There was an incident between Alex Ovechkin and a Boston Bruins player who I'll name later in a couple seconds here. A player who is just coming into the league right now. A player who isn't Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, David Pastrnak. Right? He's just another addition to the team. So last night, or a couple nights ago, sorry, Alex Ovechkin and Bruins forward Trent Frederick got into a couple altercations. Ovechkin finishing it off by taking the end of his stick and jabbing it in the you-know-wheres, right in the groin area. Ovechkin was fined $5,000. And I was talking to a buddy about it earlier on today. He's like, how did Ovi not get fined? It's crazy. League's just protecting their stars. Well, no, there's more context to it. All game long, because I watched the game, all game long, on multiple occasions, this dude, who's 23, who's a first-round pick 5 years ago, starts messing up. And by the way, in 20 games this year, he has 2 goals and an assist. Just want to point that out. He's averaging like 12 minutes on ice per game. Is pushing and shoving Alex Ovechkin behind the net, trying to drop the gloves with him, trying to send a message to him. And Ovi's looking at him like, who are you? Like, I don't know you. Get off of me. And he then kind of skates away without his gloves. This should have been a penalty. Without his gloves, because he dropped the gloves and was going to punch Ovechkin. And Ovechkin's standing there like, get out of my way. I'm getting off the ice. Later on in the game, Ovechkin's going back to the bench. And this dude's skating behind him and shoves him a couple times with the shaft of his stick close to the head. And starts pushing him, shoving him, trying to get in his head. And Ovechkin has enough of it and jabs him up top. So the two players then receive minor penalties on the player. Frederick for cross-checking and Ovechkin for slashing. And again, they, quote-unquote, nearly got into a fight. Who are you to walk up to the greatest goal scorer of all time? Yes, I'm saying that. And try to stake your claim. Who are you? You're probably a good kid. You probably got a bright fruit future ahead of you. That's not the way to make a name for yourself in the National Hockey League. Because you were shooed off by the GOAT of goal scoring in Alex Ovechkin. Like, I don't understand trying to make an impact like that. It's like stories like that. There was a story about Sean Avery. He played on the Detroit Red Wings, and they were playing the Colorado Avalanche. It was one of his first games or something like that. It was his first year, and he was on the ice, and he was giving it to Joe Sakic, right? He was trying to get under his skin. He gets back to the bench, stands up, and starts chirping Sakic again. Brendan Shanahan grabs him by the back of the jersey and throws him on the bench and says, Sean, you don't talk like that to Mr. Sakic. We respect Mr. Sakic. That was what happened back in the day. You could chirp. There was tons of chirping. But around the Steve Yzermans, Joe Sakics, Mark Messiers, you needed to be at a certain pedigree in order to be able to talk to or talk down to players of that magnitude. Sean Avery was not there. Trent Frederick, you're not there. Alex Ovechkin has over 700 goals in the National Hockey League level. Another 30-plus in the playoffs. You don't talk like that or act that way to Alex Ovechkin. You haven't earned it yet. You haven't earned the right. You haven't made your claim in this league long enough to do that. And so I told my buddy, I said, I'm glad they didn't suspend him. It's not protecting its players, star players. It's the context that went deeper in the situation. If that were to happen to Sidney Crosby, maybe Crosby doesn't do that, but someone else cleans him out and says, listen, like, that's Sid. Like, you don't talk to Sid like that. You don't do that to Ovechkin. Like, you don't. So I think they fine him $5,000. There's a stat here. The equivalent of Ovechkin's fine for someone who makes about $50,000 a year is $26.21. So the fine meant nothing. Right? The fine is like the league acknowledged it. Be like, Ovi, just like, give us like $5,000 and then go back to doing what you do. But it's a message to young players to earn your way properly into the league. Work hard. Battle hard. You get into a battle in the corner with Ovechkin and you beat him on it. That's how you stake your claim. You don't try to fight and slash and cross-check him while he's not looking. Earn your place properly. Honestly, good on Ovechkin for doing that. It was like shooing a fly away. Like, get off me, you 23-year-old punk. I've got more gray hairs on my head than you could possibly imagine. I've got more goals than you probably are going to get points in this league. Leave me alone. So good on the league for not doing anything about it. I had to rant there. I know I'm a little biased towards Ovechkin and I get that. And if you watch the play, you're like, oh, only a fine? He should have been suspended. You need to understand the context of the play and know the ramifications and the variations as to why Ovechkin did what he did. And the context to the story. Because Ovi didn't just skate up to this 23-year-old kid as a rookie and slash him in between the legs for fun. He did it because at one point he was trying to fight him and Ovechkin was like, go away. And then he cross-checked him near the head and in the body multiple times before Ovechkin took matters into his own hands and speared him right in the you-know-whats. So I don't hold it against him at all. I think the context, if you're still not in agreement with the situation, again, the matter happened, the fine was given out, move on from the scenario. But no, you need to earn your place properly in a league like that. And I'm never going to play in the National Hockey League, but I remember even in junior, right? There's certain things you just don't do. As a goalie, it was a little bit different, but as a rookie, you don't say no. You have to pick up the pucks after practice. You know, the veterans get first crack at the sandwiches on the bus ride home. You don't try to start a fight with the greatest goal scorer of all time. Like, pick anyone else. Pick Tom Wilson if you're so tough. Pick Jacob Vrana. Pick anybody else. Just don't pick Ovechkin. He's the GOAT of goal scoring. Leave him alone. Yeah, what a fun rant that was. Before we head out, a couple other news and notes to get to before we cap things off. Ottawa Senators forward Derek Stepan is out for the remainder of the season with a dislocated shoulder. He will undergo shoulder surgery later this week to repair a labrum damage to the shoulder after suffering it in an injury during a win over the Montreal Canadiens back on February 23rd. The team does expect him to be fully recovered for next season, so that's really good news, but no Stepan for the rest of the year. San Jose Sharks forward Joachim Blichfield is suspended 2 games for his hit to the head on Colorado Avalanche star Nathan MacKinnon during Wednesday's contest. The NHL Department of Player Safety announced Thursday Blichfield was ejected for the hit while MacKinnon exited the game with 12 minutes remaining. So the context for that suspension, by the way, MacKinnon was going to the bench. Blichfield hit MacKinnon to the head blindsidedly without him even looking. He also got kneed a game earlier by another Sharks forward. So context there, MacKinnon wasn't riling him up and then he did that. He just took it to that blindfully. So the suspension makes more sense in context. Anaheim Ducks defenseman Hampus Lindholm is going to be missing the next 6 weeks with a fractured left wrist. The team announced yesterday Lindholm, 27 years of age, suffered the injury during Saturday's overtime loss against the Vegas Golden Knights. He missed the previous three games with a lower body injury as well. So tough news for the Ducks defenseman and for the Ducks as a team as well. Hopefully he makes a quick recovery on that end. And finally, New Jersey Devils captain Nico Hischier is out week to week with a sinus fracture after taking a puck to the visor during Saturday's win or game against the Washington Capitals. The team announced yesterday the play occurred with under 5 minutes left in the game. Devils 5-2 loss when PK Subban's point shot caught Hischier up high. He went down, didn't return, and unfortunately is out week to week there. That is it for the show, though. I don't think I missed anything. I feel like we covered the big topics today. New head coach, Leafs are a wagon, Edmonton struggling, Walter Gretzky, and the retirement of Brent Seabrook. Enjoy the rest of the day. Enjoy the weekend. Like I mentioned earlier on, I'm going to be joining Mike Stubbs, voice of the London Knights, on his show 980 CFPL News called Friday Nights just after 7 o'clock. Be talking some news around the NHL world. Enjoy. Make sure you subscribe and follow along on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. I'm going to try and upload as many episodes as I can on YouTube as well. Just search Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast and follow me on social media, Instagram, Twitter, at ST Hockey Podcast. My personal account is Kyle Grimard. Enjoy. Have fun. Stay safe. And I'll see you back on Tuesday. Until then, that's a wrap.